It is my pleasure to introduce the Tsarina of Multimedia. Let us hear it for Janet Kuipers.
Yes!
Excuse me. I've been driving for a while. This gas station is the first sign of life I've seen. We've been looking for a 196 North McIntosh Court for a while. Now, the directions we had said that we had to take a left turn on the street we were on just a few miles ago. But a McIntosh Court wasn't there. There's a McIntosh Street, and MapQuest told me of a McIntosh Avenue, but an avenue would be going the wrong way. I'm really confused. You're the only attendant here. You're the only one that can help me out. This is the address. How do I get there? I just got out of college a few months ago. Just got my degree. I feel important now. I know the career I've studied for. Now I've got to get the job of my dreams. I filled out a ton of resumes. Got a few calls back. And now I've got my first interview. I've got my interview jacket on. I answer all the questions right. I see the offices. I think, excuse me, this is what I should have. Am I doing this right? How do I get there? I am a 28-year-old woman. I am doing well on my own. I'm the one with the car. I'm the one with the plan. But people always look to me for answers. I look around me. I am pleased. And then I see my high school friends, married, sometimes with their high school sweetheart, and with a kid or two. Different life from me. I've been the beacon all along, but here I am, on top of the mountain, the one with the answers, alone. And I think, hey, I'm a girl. Maybe I should want that. Or maybe I should want that white picket fence and that 2.3 kids and that man that I can lean on so I don't have to be the beacon. I look down at myself and I think, this is what I am. I look at these suburban families and I think, is this what I should want? My clock is ticking. See this? This should be my plan. Who will sweep me off my feet? Where is my man? Where is that dream? How do I get there? I can feel your presence across the room. A movement, a stir. Your long shadow stretches across the walls. An occasional glance, I'll take whatever I can take. A stranger, yet I feel I know you all too well. I long to see you sitting again, cigarette in hand. I want to be able to walk up behind you, rest my hands on your shoulders, lean my head next to your face. I long to have my cheek near yours, and not touching, but so close that I could still feel your warmth, your desire. Our skin wouldn't touch, but I would still feel the rush from your presence. There I sit. I sit alone, separated, isolated, away from my only love, my obsession. I pull out a fountain pen. I look at the lines, the contours of his face, defining the piercing eyes, the pointed nose, the tender lips. I feverishly draw, I sketch, I capture his image, I stare, I gaze, I memorize his every detail, but he never looks back. So I will draw until my fountain pen runs dry. I sat there in the shade, I took a stick. I wrote your name in the ground. The preacher says the number one sin is lust. Then I am condemned to hell, for I want you. And I don't care what preacher says, for if the elements wash away your name tonight, I will be back tomorrow to write it again. I look out my window. And I see that insanely tall man walking down the street with a girlfriend that's like 5'2". And I wonder if this girl has a father figure complex. And I wonder if this guy needs a small girl that he can break into two pieces. Or if he feels the need to be dominant over everything in his life. Isn't the total white male dominant over everything already? So I wonder, why is this insanely short girl dating this insanely tall man? Why are they taking from the gene pool these, albeit Neanderthal, men from us tall women? Is this fair? How do I have a chance at a tall man when these short Barbie doll women stop me before I can start? I see these images, these people walking down the streets hand in hand, and I wonder, how do I get that image I dream of? How do I get that dozen roses? How do I get that box of chocolates on Valentine's Day? Hell, I'll settle for sweetest day. How do I get these generic symbols of love? I mean, how do I get there? Grade school. Lace and construction paper cutouts, mimicking our hearts with school glue, a 64-pack of crayons, a doily, perhaps, and a child's scribblings. Be my Valentine. The beginning of every cold February, the classes of children are taught to make enough little hearts for everyone, so that no one may be disappointed, so that everyone can be your Valentine. Nonetheless, one little child's construction paper mailbox come February 14th always had less than everyone else's. And then it gets easier as the years go on. Mommies buy little packs of Valentine cards for their children to sign and give away to all the other children at school. It saves them from having to make all those cards. The glue, the glitter, and the cutouts are messy. Every 14th, the second month when I was little, I remember Daddy bringing heart-shaped boxes home for all the girls, myself, my sister, my mother. I can remember her mother now, her candy box on her ironing board, thanking him once again for the lovely gift. And so it goes. And the card shops get fuller this time every year. Husbands saying, "My wife will kill me if I don't get her a card." Or young women complaining, "My boss told me to get a card for his wife." And the flowers seem the same, don't they? Carnations arranged in a big ball atop a little basket. Red, yellow, pink, white. Lovely. All the adornments of the holiday. Don't stop short at the best. A girlfriend said to me that she was sure that boyfriends break up with you by the beginning of February so they don't have to get you anything for Valentine's Day. So they don't have to say that they love you. Last year I spent Valentine's Day taking those chunky hearts with messages on them and scribbling my own on the back. Like, screw you.
go away. Leave me alone. Never liked the taste of those candies.
And come Valentine's Day, the women are just getting lonely, and the married couples are arguing, and the suicide rate is going up. And for the people with someone, a woman looks at the carnations on her dining room table, reads the card in her hand that says, "Love, Jake," and wonders why it doesn't feel good yet. I see all this hatred at a time that's supposed to be good, and I wonder where that light at the end of the tunnel is, and I wonder where that cloud's silver lining is. And I try to remember what love is like, and I try to remember that hearts and candies and flowers and sunsets and all that other crap that's supposed to make you happy. And I try to remember those Harlequin romance novels that I never read, where someone's rescuing the damsel, riding away on a white horse into the sunset. And I was wondering, where is that in real life? And how do I get there? How do I get out of this cycle? How do I get out of this downward spiral? How far will we push each other, I wonder, as we sit in the living room, waging this emotional battle, knowing that in the end it will be with you having your sex with me, leaving me when you're through with me. That is what I'm here for. That is my function. But at least I have this. At least I can make you fight me a little more for it. I know that in the end you'll win, but at least for these few moments, these few fleeting moments, I have this control over you. And then the pain of being with you comes back, and you win. But let me have this. Just this. I know I'll get no more. Please. Maybe this is what I deserve, this pain. But I can't let you go. I need that connection to you. I need that pain. I can't be alone. Even though I'm alone when I'm with you. I guess I feel like I'm nothing when I'm with you. But then again, I'm nothing without you. I am the woman who loves pain. I look for you, and I usually find you, one of you. I know you all do the same things, act the same way. I've gotten used to it. And they tell me I should find someone better, and that I am settling, that this is not love. But I've never felt love. And although this is pain, although I am hurting with you, it's better than hurting alone. I swear it is. Every once in a while, I want to talk to one of them. See if they'll actually listen. But I've learned by now that they're not interested in what I have to say. That's not what I'm here for. I get up to find my clothes. Sometimes they stay asleep. Sometimes they wake up. "Why are you getting dressed?" they ask, and I tell them that I've got to get going. They never ask me to stay. You see, I've got this road map. I've seen how families work. My mom and dad are still together. People want to hook up. People want to get together. People want to procreate. It's human nature. Spread the seed. tend to the flock. I mean, Hallmark even added a sweetest day to the holiday mix in a different season from Valentine's Day, so that people would have another time of year to be mushy and gushy and romantic with one another. Anything to boost sales of flowers and candies and cards. Anything to increase sales. And you know, I see these generic stereotypes about love, and sometimes I feel like I should be a part of that. That I should get those bonbons or truffles or whatever candy you're normally supposed to get on Valentine's Day. And you know, I don't even really like eating candies, but damn it, the sentiment is there. I want that sentiment. I want to know how to find love, maybe, because damn it, I've been looking, and I don't know what to tell myself any longer. How do I get there? What do we tell our youth when we let them out on probation for violent crimes because there's no room left in our jails? What does it say of us when a painting of a clown by John Wayne Gacy sells for millions? What does it say of our self-esteem when hundreds of women write letters to Charles Manson asking for his hand in marriage? What does it say of our media when it glorifies these dark heroes? Dear hero, I want to know how your mind works. I want to know why you did it. I want to know how you feel about politics and love and marriage. I hope you're not suffering too much. I love you. What rights do we really take away from those who take our rights from us? I hope you're not suffering too much. Richard Speck, convicted of killing 8 nurses, was videotaped in his prison cell by cellmates with his male lover counting $100 bills, snorting mounds of cocaine, showing off his hormonally induced shapely breasts. When a member of society commits a crime, they relinquish the rights they have taken from others. In theory. One man in prison filed a lawsuit against the state for serving peas to him for too many days in a row. One man in prison filed a lawsuit against Ann Landers because she published his letter where he wrote that he killed his wife. One man in prison filed lawsuit after lawsuit against the state solely because he felt a great joy in uselessly spending the taxpayers' money. What do we say to all of this? What do we say? I mean, what do I say to all of this? I mean, how do I get away from those who like to kill? I mean, what should I say? If you can't lead, then follow? If you can't beat them, then join them? Then how do you get to that point? How do I get there? They tell you the meek shall inherit the earth, and then they lead their lambs to the slaughter, as I do to the ones who will follow. The meek shall inherit the earth. You see, the meek wouldn't know what to do with their inheritance. They know nothing of property, ownership, power. I teach them not to understand these values, but to fear them, to sacrifice, to stay meek. I'm the one who tells them how to dress, how to walk, how to kill themselves. All they need is a reason, as long as they don't have to think it through. People will believe anything if you tell it to them the right way. Give them a few tokens and they'll create icons out of you. But not everyone can guide, can lead the lost, give themselves to the followers who need them with nothing in return. like the stars, which seem so small, so meek from here, yet are unfathomable, uncontrollable. Like the shepherd, quietly guiding his flock, but holding a stick all the while. I'm the one who guides them to their destiny. Like the stars, so small, so unfathomable, so beautiful in the night sky. How do we understand this love for what we always see in the stars, what is always just out of reach? How do we get there? We go to the moon and try to learn. We send rockets to Saturn's moon Titan to learn what our planet might have been like when this solar system was created. We want to learn. We want to understand. Because we are in love. How do we get there? Moonlight is a hypnotist, putting people in a trance. Whenever you look at it, it takes over your soul. No one can stop it, but no one wants to. I think everybody loves the moon. We hear of romance under the moonlight. I remember looking at the moon through our telescope when I was like 6 years old. And historically, scientifically, I think everyone was transfixed to their televisions or radios when man first landed on the moon. There seemed to be a moment of awe and inspiration and amazement when there was that one small step for man, that one giant leap for mankind. Scientists have deduced, in trying to guess how this planet got a moon and how necessary it is for our weather patterns, that when the moon was first formed, one theory was that it was formed off of a rogue planet that they call Orpheus, that the moon was first much, much closer to Earth when it was first formed than it is today, that it may have been only 14,000 miles away and not at its current almost 240,000 mile distance it's at now. Astronomers now estimate that because of gravity's change, the moon every year is a mile and a half farther away from the Earth. A mile and a half. If you remember the moon looking so big when you looked at it in the night sky when you were little, well, you may have been right. Lori Anderson, while studying with NASA as their artist in residence, learned that scientists at NASA during the Cold War and during this country's desire for nuclear testing, they considered setting off nuclear bombs on the dark side of the moon. Because, you see, nobody sees that side of the moon, and the distance would make it a safe distance for radiation for people here on Earth. When I heard that, I thought, what would setting nuclear explosions off on half of the moon do to its orbit? And what would that do to its effect on our weather? And then consider the earthquake that caused the tsunami that happened in Asia a few months ago. That actually slowed the rotation of the planet for like a second. And so would these explosions on the moon affect our rotation or possibly our orbit? And then I thought, why would anyone ever want to destroy a heavenly body we so need and don't know enough about? Why would anyone want to destroy something that so many people are so infatuated with, that so many people revere? Astronomy is like a forbidden love affair, something that you can never reach, but something that you can always hope for, something you could always admire from afar. Something whose constancy can give you hope, even if only when you're standing outside in the night sky and looking up at its perennial beauty. Winter evenings, I would look for you, dancing along the horizon. You were always fighting the great bear of the north, the bull in the winter. You were my favorite. Whenever I could, I would look for you out my window in my driveway. I remember a nebula lived in the center of your sword. You, spending millennia fighting, you have taught me well. The other night, I looked out my window again. You were there, possibly receiving strength from me, as I did in you so many years, with you showing me how to get there.
The trick is, you cannot get there from here.